Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to another Anime NYC 2019 podcast special. I am your King Baby Duck Evan Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. Today, you are going to hear a very lively roundtable interview with voice actress Kristen McGuire. Kristen can be heard doing the voice for Senko in The Helpful Fox Senko-san, Rin Toyama in New Game, Milim in That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime, and Tama in Magical Girl Raising Project. For this interview, B3 was joined by Gemstone Publishing, Toonami Faithful, Dub Talk, and The Cartoon Cipher. So, let's say a little prayer for our Fox Girl deity as we dive into this Anime NYC 2019 interview special with Kristen McGuire.
Just go around and hopefully everyone's questions get answered in some form of fashion.
Yeah.
So
yes.
I guess what I would want to start with is Dr. Stone, because that's got such a huge presence at this show this year. It has taken off in a way that really surprised me. And I guess my question would be, like, what's it like to be involved with that series as it's just seemingly becoming this, like, enormous thing?
Well, it's really cool. I've been a voice actor for about 6 years, and this is my first time playing such a large role in a show such as this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really happy to be cast. Ruri is a really cool character. She's one of those characters, like, as an actor, I don't do a ton of recording for her, especially because she's sick most of the beginning of the series.
So you do a lot of coughing?
I do a lot of coughing.
That's gotta be hard.
It is hard, because I cough for real. I don't fake it. Especially in the later episodes, she has this whole coughing fit that lasts for 20 seconds, and we got to do that several times.
Whoa,
we're like, hand me a vape pen.
It was bad, because, like, she has, like, her body moves as she coughs, and then we have to cough realistically, like, I have pneumonia, to these body flaps, and then, of course, you have to do, like, two passes of it to make sure that everything times out right. And so by the time we were done, I actually, tore up my throat, like, really bad.
No.
But we saved it for the end,
okay.
So we did all the speaking parts first, and we did the coughing part at the end, but it was pretty bad, because it was so long, and I really wanted to get it right, because, like, I wanted to give this disease justice. You know, like, it kills people.
I mean, like, pneumonia.
It's not a joke, you know? And so I really, like, went all out with it, and, like, really committed to coughing and, like, gasping for air. Like, I have had bronchitis, which can lead to pneumonia.
Mm.
And so coughing like that, like, I bruised ribs coughing when I had bronchitis, and I'm like, this is the kind of cough she has. And so, like, so I'm really gonna commit to it, and I think I actually bled in my throat a little bit at the end of that session. But everyone tells me it sounds great. And so, hashtag worth it. But
I will say it, I'd hope it'd be worth it.
Yeah.
As long as you're doing better now, that's what about it.
That's what tea is for.
Yay, tea.
I didn't have anything else to do after that session, so it was good. I could I would say I would rest my voice, but I write scripts, so I actually went into my office and continued to write.
Yeah.
But yeah, so being part of Dr. Stone has been really amazing. I met the creators at this con.
That's awesome.
It was really amazing. The con was very generous. I emailed them and I was like, I play Rory and I have a gift for the creators. Could you please arrange a meeting? And so they did. And so I got to meet both the writer and the artist. And I gave them each a drawing I did of Rory. And it turns out I am the first voice actor they've ever met from either Japan
or
America for Dr. Stone. And so that was, like, a really neat moment, just told him I was, like, really excited to be part of the show, and they loved my drawings. Boichiro?
Boichi.
Boichi? I'm combining their names. Oh, no. Edit that part out.
Ritro Inagaki is the writer, and Boichi is the artist.
Yes. And, but Boichi said that he thought my drawing was better than his drawings, and wow. I was like, no way. No, sir. But they were very generous and wonderful.
Hi,
But yeah, so that is what it was. It's been a really great ride.
Awesome.
Would you call yourself one of the head writers at Funimation? You worked on.
Oh no, I'm not a head writer. Not at all. I'm a script writer. I've been a script writer for probably 4 years. So, but I've done everything. I've directed and written and acted. So.
I do want to talk about the writing aspect real quick, since you brought it up. As a writer and as someone who has studied both English writing and Japanese extensively myself, I know how wildly different these two languages are. So I'm curious if you could sort of explain what the challenges are when it comes to English localization of Japanese scripts.
The biggest challenge is, of course, each show is different. Some shows require you to stick very closely to the translation. Love, Life, Sunshine is like that, and so we stick very closely to the translation. There's a lot of terms the licensor doesn't want us to change, even if it doesn't necessarily make sense.
Yeah.
And so we keep it, because that's what we're told to do. And then other shows, like High School DxD, Hero, is free reign, and you can do literally whatever you want. And so I have to adapt my writing style per show to match the director's opinions, and then the licensor's opinions, and that's really, like, the challenging part is changing the style of voice for each show and making sure that, like, if it's a serious show, then I'm treating it seriously, and if it's a funny show, then I'm treating it with humor.
Right.
And we all have our strengths. Mine is slice of life. I get a lot of slice of life because I write very naturalistic dialogue. And then people say I have the best meme humor because I spend a lot of time on the internet, so if it is appropriate, I will put meme humor into a script, but not all shows do well with that. The biggest problem is that the way Japanese language is structured compared to English language is very different, mm-hmm. and of course the flaps are pre-animated, so I have to write to these pre-animated mouth flaps. And a lot of things they do in Japan is they pause a lot in the middle of speaking, and so they'll say something like, you know, ito, ohayo, gozaimasu. Ooh. So then I have, like, all these flaps that are separated by pauses, but if I say, well, good morning to you, then we sound like William Shatner.
So
I have to rewrite that to sound like a more complete thought, mm-hmm. but still honor that animation.
Of course.
And if the animation has very specific mouth flaps, like Love Live was really good about this, but they'd be like, oh, hi, oh, and then, like, they'll have this big old O mouth shape, so I can't say good morning, because that ends in an upward, like, closed mouth kind of sound, so I would have to be like, what's up, guys, because guys is a more open sound, and so those are all things that we have to take into account when writing for English, and then still, you know, keeping true to it, and then, of course, the other biggest problem is that a lot of people don't know is that in subtitles, when they translate it, a lot of times the translation is much longer than what will fit on a subtitle screen, so they cut out things they don't think are important. It'll be things like, in Kono Oto, the translator's really good about saying things like, hey, this is the full sentence, but due to only being able to fit so many characters on a screen, I shortened it to this. So instead of saying, like, this is all the high schools in this prefecture that are participating in this tournament for the Koto, it'll say, all the high schools are participating in this tournament. And so all this other information just isn't there now, even though that is what is said, because they can only fit so many lines of dialogue onto a subtitle. The problem with that is I still have all the flaps for all those things that are not being said. Mm. And so I have to fill those flaps without filling those flaps, if that makes sense. So I can't be like, oh, we're all going to do this tournament for the Kodo, and after this we're going to go get ice cream and go to the arcade, because that's not actually happening. So I can't add those things, because that's not true. And so I have to find ways to, what we say is like, put filler into it without making it sound fillery. So instead of being like, I mean, well, the thing is, I guess we could maybe go to this tournament. You know, I can't say all that. That sounds silly. People don't talk like that. So instead I'll write something like, well, here's an idea. We could do the tournament, and that's the one that all the high schools participate in. Yeah. I'm like, cool. Now I've filled three sentences of flaps for this one line of translation that I had.
Yeah.
So that is the biggest hurdle of being a scriptwriter, is constantly, you're playing Tetris with words. And you're trying to, I don't know, it's like looking into a cabinet and figuring out where to put all your groceries. And then shuffling things around.
Speaking of scripts that you've written, what series have you had the most enjoyment in adapting into English?
I mean, High School DxD was a lot of fun. I always say that's some of my best writing, which is a shame, because it's such a weird show, and I'm like, man, my best jokes are in that show, and I can't show it to my kids. It also depends on who you're working with. There are definitely directors that I get along with really well, that it really feels like a collaboration when we work on a show.
Yeah.
When I worked with Clifford Chapin on that time we got Reincarnated as a Slime, we worked very closely on it, and we like would bounce ideas back and forth, like even outside of work. So it was very much like, this is a collaboration between us, and you know, we are improving on these jokes if we think something is funnier and things like that. And then there are other times that I don't talk to the director at all, and so I just do a show, and you know, maybe that show's not my cup of tea, but that's what I was assigned that season. And so it's still my job to make it my best and do the best for the fans. But, you know, that was more of a job and less of a passion project. There are definitely passion projects, and then there are assignments. So,
actually, on the matter of that, I had a quick question, just because you very much seem like somebody who's excited, enthusiastic about what you do. When it comes to, like, actually looking into the shows you're working on, how much, like, research do you put into, like, a project you are assigned? Do you actively go out and seek the source material, some of this stuff, or do you personally prefer to go and watch?
If the source material is there, I will absolutely 100% read it. It is important. I need it. I need it to know everything that's going to happen, so I don't write something that will bite us in the butt later. Magical Girl Raising Project, Astra, were all shows that had pre-existing source material that I felt like it was really important. I could not have written the character of Charse without knowing where Charse ends up in Astra. And so I had to be very particular about how I wrote Charse and how I wrote certain things. And I would leave notes, so like in the manga, this happens and this happens. And same thing with Slime. I'm like, this is important because of this thing. So if there's source material, I always read it. Even if I'm not super interested in it, I want to read it. Unfortunately, sometimes we get shows that don't have licensed source material, and I can't take that seriously because it's translated by a fan, and I don't know that what they're translating is accurate because it is not going through a licensor. Kono Oto is like that, and so I'm very much in the dark most of the time on that show.
So speaking of Kono Oto, was it kind of difficult to adapt scripts for that, since like koutos aren't really a common Western instrument?
Not really. Some shows tend to be more Japanese than others in their context, and in those cases we just approach it as an, if you're watching the show, it's because you're fascinated with Japanese culture, so we believe a lot of the Japanese terms like in Japanese. There are some shows that are more for American audiences that sometimes we'll try to make that more localized, but if it's something like Kono Oto, we just stay true to the source material, and that is a show where they prefer to stay closer to the translation and things like that.
So, like, since, like, it's not officially licensed, the manga here, do you get, like, notes from the Japanese side about what, like, needs to be kept in mind with certain...
Sometimes I'll get notes from the translator. It depends on the translator, because sometimes our translation comes from Crunchyroll, which comes with no notes. It's just literally straight translation. And then if it's done in-house, Then we'll get notes from the translator that's like, this is what this thing means, and that's generally very helpful if it's available. If not, we have Google.
Good old Google.
So you mentioned Magical Girl Raising Project.
It's my favorite show. Just throw that out there.
Spoiler alert, my heart broke for Tama. So what was your reaction to the series as it just kept getting darker and darker, and then seeing what happens to Tama right there, like, near the last episode?
Well, here's the thing about Magical Girl Raising Project. I was actually set to assistant direct on that show with Sunny about a year before we actually directed it. And so we watched the show to prepare directing it. I was assigned to write it as well at the time. Mm-hmm. We did all that. We binge-watched it. We're like, this is such a good show. Like, this is so good. Like, I'm like, this is a great show. We're going to have a great time. We set our cast, which I will not say who it was, because that never happened. And then at the last minute, we lost the license to it, and that show was lost to us. And I was heartbroken for that show, because I loved it. I was 100% about it, and then he got Kide, and we worked on that instead, which is still a wonderful show, and I loved working on it, but I felt like Magical Girl Raising Project was my lost child. Mm. And then a year later, we managed to get the license for it again, and I heard it was on our list, and I went to our supervisors. I was working full-time as a writer at that point, and I begged them to let me write that show. I was like, I've already watched all of it. I've read the light novels. I was like, I love this show. I was supposed to assistant direct on it. Can you please let me write this show? And they let me, because it made sense. I'd already seen it all. And then Jade ended up directing it, and she did auditions, and I auditioned for it. And I thought, if nothing else, I'm really happy that I'm getting to write this show, because it's so important to me. And I always liked the character Tama, and that was the one character we never set in our previous cast that I won't talk about. But I always thought she was a really cool character, and I auditioned for her, but she's not a character I typically get cast as, and so I wasn't really sure about what my odds were. And then, like, a week later, Jade came in, and she was like, hey, you're playing Tama, and I actually cried, because I was so happy. I was so happy to be part of the show. Like, it was like my lost child that had come back to me. And so I was so excited to be such a character that I adored. And I was sad for Tama and what happened with her, but I like that Tama was a good person through and through, all the way to the end, because there were so few of them.
She did nothing
show.
Wrong.
That was the thing.
Yeah, and
I want her to be like the last survivor, just sitting in the corner, and be like,
"That's why she couldn't."
And I actually made a comment on that in a prior podcast I had done. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Where I actually felt like if it was something like a Danganronpa thing, I felt like Tama probably would have been one of like the final five or final six or something.
She
like
lasted a lot longer than I think anyone anticipated.
Yeah.
And I was grateful for that, because you know there were characters that didn't make it past episode two, and so I was like, "Hey, I get to be in most of the series." But
she's a lot of sleep.
Magical Girl Raising Project is my passion project, and when people go, what's the favorite thing you've ever worked on? I'm like, you probably haven't heard of it, but it's this show, and this is my favorite, and I love it, and I will always love it forever until I die.
You've never met a 5-year-old character you just wish would die, like,
Oh, yeah, that's terrible.
Now, you've been doing all sorts of stuff in the anime industry as far as writing, directing, voice acting for several years now, and I'm curious to get your thoughts as far as how things have changed either at the microphone or behind the microphone over the last few years.
Things are faster now. Things are much faster now. When I started voice acting, simuldubs did not exist. Everything was done what we call DVD style, and you would go in and you would work on one show and for however many hours of recording you had, and then you wouldn't hear anything for a couple of months. When I started voice acting, it was pretty common back then to do a session, you know, once every couple of months, you know, if you were lucky, every couple of weeks. So when I started, I got called in about every 2 months. And if I got called in twice in a month, it was a great month for me. I was really excited. And then when we cast Assassination Classroom, I found out I was cast in that. It was one of, at the time it was like the third or fourth show we were doing on this like broadcast dub that was only 4 episodes behind. Now we're same day or 2 episodes behind, so it's even faster. But it was the first time I was ever told, like, hey, don't go out of town for 22 weeks. And I was like, 22 weeks of work? Like, this is amazing. And so as an actor now, I'll see a lot of new voice actors come in, and they'll be like, man, I haven't been called in, like, 2 weeks. And I'm like, like, a sweet summer child. Like, talk to me when you've gone four.
It's
like,
if only you knew.
If only you knew how it used to be. But I think, in a way, like, coming from this old school way that we did things into this new school way that we're doing things, this faster way, I think it makes a lot of us who have been there longer a little more grateful for the way things are now. We could talk about roles immediately. Gosh, when we dubbed Nichijou, I was like, I can't remember the last time I had to go months without talking about a role. Like, I'm so used to being like, I'm cast, in a week I'll talk about it, you know, and now, you know, Nichijou was like, we recorded that last year, and like, it didn't come out till, you know, about halfway through this year.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, I can't wait to talk about Anika. And I was like, this sucks, I forgot how much this sucks.
That must have been such a challenging show, because it went, like, undubbed for so many years.
Yes. Mm. It did. I mean, I just acted in it. I didn't do anything else with it. I feel like that would be a hard show to write. Luckily, I didn't have to do it.
God bless Howard Wang for doing something that lucky.
Yeah.
Shows like that are always a collaboration between the writer and the director and everybody involved in making it work.
I think that was also a J-dub, right?
Yeah, that was also a J-dub. Yeah. Mm. And it was... We actually recorded that after Magical Girl Raisin Project. So it was weird to be like, whoa, we could talk about Magical Girl Raisin Project, but not Nichijou. But yeah, so things are much different now. They're much faster paced, and you have to be able to kind of keep up with that pace. But you're never bored.
Oh.
I write 2 scripts a week.
Oh, wow.
Which is a lot. When I first started writing, it was very common to do 1 script a week. And, you know, back then it was either DVD style, so you could watch the whole series, or it was broadcast of, so there were, like, 4 episodes ahead. Now we're, like, 2 weeks or same day, so it's a little bit different. But I like being busy, so yeah. I like the pace of things the way they are now. And, like I said, there's a lot of work. We're doing a lot more shows. When I started, I think we were maybe working on, like, 3 or 4 shows at a time, and now we're doing 18 shows at Funimation. So there's a lot more work to go around, so I feel like it's a little bit easier to be a voice actor in this day and age than it was 6 years ago when competition was really tough. Competition is still really tough, but there's a lot more opportunity, and so it's easier to, you know, a few seasons ago I was in 5 shows at one time, and that was a lot for me, but it was great. I loved it. I was like, man, I have so many announcements this season. I was like, this is great. Like, I'm adding a lot to my resume.
Speaking of a show that you did a simuldub for this past year, probably one of my favorite Slice of Life feel-good shows, The Helpful Fox Senko-san.
Oh, yeah!
So, can you tell me a little bit about the mindset of when playing such a warm-hearted and very caring character?
I fell in love with Senko right away. The show, they basically send us lists, and they say, give us your top 5 picks. Senko was not my top 5. She was, like, in my top 5, but she wasn't, like, my number 1. I think we lost the number 1 show I wanted. Sometimes we'll get lists that aren't like, these aren't set in stone, so don't get too attached. But Senko was one that I liked. I love Animal Girls. Like, it's my all-time favorite thing to play. I think they're really cute. I like writing about them. I just like the way they look. I like drawing them. So I was like, yeah, Fox Girls. I will draw Fox Girls. I did draw a Fox Girl. You can buy a Senko print. I was like, but I would like to write about it. And it seemed like a cool thing. And I'd done so many isekais at that point that I was like, I am burnt out on isekais. And that was like my only note that season. I was like, please, no more isekais.
Yeah. Ironically, it was the reverse for that show.
Yeah, right. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, it's called the Yashike. It's.
But if you follow me on Twitter, then you know that I am generally a very positive person, and I try to spread a lot of positivity, because the internet is mean, and I don't want to be the mean person, and so I try to be like, I'm so sorry, that was me. I try to be a place where people can come and, like, get some positive feedback in their day, or, you know, sometimes you need someone to, like, believe in you. And the thing about Senko is she's like, there's this darkness, and the more sad you are, like, the more this darkness spreads, and the more it affects other people. And I'm like, and that's not wrong, you know, because it is like that. When you're around somebody who's negative or sad, you feel that. Mm-hmm. And when you're around someone who's positive and happy, you feel that. And so I immediately, like, connected with Cinco as a character. And so I was really excited to write this show because I really liked what it stood for. And then we did auditions. And I auditioned for it. And I thought, if anything, I was like, I'll probably be, like, a good fit for Shiro because I play Spaz characters really well. Or Koenji. I felt really good about Koenji. I felt okay about Cinco, but I was like, that's not my voice type. I don't play a lot of Cinco characters. So when I got cast as Cinco, I, like, ugly cried. I, like, ugly cried and, like, thanked the universe. I was like, thank you, universe, for this gift. I'm going to make the most of this, I swear. So I was really, really excited to play Cinco because I really liked what she represented. And I'm a mom, and so I take care of people all the time. And I cook, and I clean. I'm a pretty decent cook. My boyfriend can't cook at all, so I cook. I do all the cooking. So a lot of things about Cinco, about, like, when she says things like, well, pick something for dinner, and he's like, I don't know. And she's like, that's the hardest request to fulfill. I'm like, man, yes. True story, am I right? I was like, big mood, Cinco. So a lot of Cinco was just me drawing on my own maternal instincts, and I've taken care of people since I was 21, so I've been doing it a long time. But Cinco has to sound youthful, but also motherly, so there's a really in-between tone with her that she can't sound like a child because she's 800.
Yeah.
But she can't sound old either, and so it was a very delicate line we walked with Cinco. But people seem to really like it, so I think we nailed it.
So, as you mentioned yourself, you're a parent, and so I had a curious question, just because I am an uncle, my brother's kid. Thank you. I forgot the word nephew for a second. I'm eventually, whether my brother wants it or not, I'm eventually going to show him stuff. So I was curious, as, like, a parent and stuff, how would you go about introducing certain shows to like, younger audiences, and, like, when do you think this is okay, or it's a little tricky?
I feel like I'm the worst person to ask because my kids have been around anime so long. They watched Assassination Classroom when they were, like, 6.
I can see Assassination Classroom, but I'm actually curious myself. Like, have you ever had that interesting inkling of, I want to show my kids all the stuff I've worked on, and you have to sort of...
I have shows that I have to sit down. My 12-year-old loves crime and gore and bodies, which is so weird because if you know me, that's not me at all. And so she is, like, my opposite. She's 100% her own person, which is great. So she went in to watch Attack on Titan when she was 10, and I was like, no, ma'am, there's a lot of gore in that. So she waited till I was not there one day and then logged into Funimation and watched it. And so I was like, well, now the damage is done. You've already seen on the first episode is so gory to start off with. I was like, well, I guess you're going to watch this now. So if I do get cast in something that I'm like, I'm not okay with you watching this, I have to, like, sit down and I'm like, no, ma'am, you cannot watch Goblin Slayer.
Oh.
You cannot watch this. I don't want you to see this part of me. So I do have to draw, like, hard lines. But it just depends on, like, what your family is okay with. You know, like, I used to love watching things like Snow White and the Red Hair and Show by Rock, which are, like, very friendly, like, happy, bubbly shows. My 10-year-old loves that stuff. My 12-year-old's like, when can I watch Tokyo Ghoul? So it's very much based on what your family's okay with, and you should not take my advice at all. So that is my advice to you.
So what you're saying is I should show him High School DxD.
Oh, no. No, I had an 11-year-old come up to me at a con recently. I was like, I love High School DxD. And I was like, how old are you?
I was like, Andrew, your brother.
I
was like, you should be watching that show. And her mom was like, what show? And she goes, shh. And I'm like, oh, gosh. I'm
I
sorry.
Can also see, like, showing him, like, Dr. Stone or something down the road.
Oh, yeah,
Stone. Yeah, my kids watch Dr. Stone. They watch My Hero Academia. You know, I feel like, depending on how old your nephew is, like, there are shows that are definitely, like, kid-friendly, you know? So, I guess it just depends on what you guys think is kid-friendly in your house.
Understood, thank you.
Yeah. Maybe one that could be kid-friendly, but it's a great, great kind of, I wouldn't call it a slice of life, but maybe cute girls doing cute things, or rather, cute girls doing amazing things. New Game.
Yeah! We watched New Game. There's been a lot of New Game love at this con. Mostly from the Dub Talk people.
Yes.
Gotcha.
So you expect more of it.
So you play Ren, who is kind of Koyagami's second in command, both at work and even practically as a life partner. So I wanted to know what some of the challenges were when it came to bringing a natural dynamic to her and Ko, especially if you had the opportunity to work off of Michelle's performances when she played her.
I typically recorded before Michelle, which is great because I left her a lot of really dirty bombs.
Oh.
She's really easy to make laugh, and so anytime I had the opportunity, I would do things like that because it would really mess her up. But Rin was a challenging character for me because, again, I play a lot of spazzes, or at least at that point I had played a lot of spazzes, like Cecil from Gossip and things like that, like really high-energy characters. Mm-hmm. So playing a character that was like so put together and level-headed was hard, and I remember leaving like the first two sessions, and I'm like, this director's going to regret this decision. And like I texted him, and I was like, do you regret this? And he was like, what? No, shut up. And I was like, I'm sorry. I was like, I just feel like you do. I was like, because I feel like I'm really struggling. But once we got settled into it, once we found Rin, I feel like it went really well. And Rin was very easy once I got to know her and figure out, what makes Rin tick and things like that. And after that, it was much easier. And she's a great character. And she's kind of like the office mom. So again, it's not like anything I haven't done. I'm kind of the office mom now, too. I'm like, I have Tylenol if your head hurts. So.
Are you like me, wishing that Pekka was a real game?
I do wish Pekka was a real game. I play it, and Fairy Stories.
Yeah.
Oh, adorable.
I thought Pekka was such a great idea. I was like, why doesn't this exist? I'm so sad. So
I'm kind of shifting gears a little bit from writing and acting. What was it like directing Citrus and Gamers?
Oh my gosh, well, I love it. I love directing. Direction is actually my passion. It's where I would like to end back up eventually. Yeah. I just started recently assistant directing again. I'm what we call a sub-director, which means when people are sick, I cover for them. Which is great, because now I have to know 16 shows. So I have sub-directed on Ensemble Stars and Black Clover and Kono Oto this season, which is great. Kono Oto I write, so that was easy enough. but directing my own shows was scary, because I'm like, man, if this fails, it's my fault. It's because I didn't cast it right or something like that. Gamers was about people that gamed, and so I game, but I'm probably not as serious as some other people. So I tried to cast people I knew that played games, so that if something came up that was game-related and I didn't know what it meant, someone could explain it to me. And also Patrick Sykes wrote it, and he would leave tons of great notes. His writing was phenomenal on that show, and so he would leave notes and things like that that made it easy to work off of. But the casting is fun. It's my favorite part. I think it's most people's favorite parts. It's like playing Tetris. I wanted to use Brandon McInnes in Gamers, but at the time he hadn't done very much work at Funimation, but I thought he had a great voice, and I'd worked with him on Skigakide and a little bit on EdLive, and he's very easy to work with. He's very much a people pleaser. He's got a great positive energy to him, and if you're going to surround yourself with someone for 12 straight weeks, you should definitely do someone that you like being around.
Brandon's a good guy. I've actually interviewed him in the past.
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy. He's a phenomenal actor. He's a stage actor, a phenomenal singer. And so I was like, hey, I want to cast you in this. Would you be up for this? And he was like, yes. And my only concern about Gamers was that Keita was played by a girl in Japan. And I was really afraid that he was going to be a girl halfway through the series. And so I actually asked Brandon, I was like, can you read the light novel? Because he speaks fluent Japanese.
Really? Yeah.
Yes. And I was like, can you read the light novel and let me know what you find out? And he was like, he's a dude. And I was like, okay, well, good. You're cast. You're safe. When we got to episode 6 and they go to the pool, I was like, oh, thank God. Now we know for sure. But so Gamers was fun. It was my first time working with Brittany Karbowski on such a large level. I'd worked with her on very small bit parts, but she was so friendly and so happy to be there that I was like, yes, I would like to work with you for a long time. And now we're really good friends because of working on Gamers together. So it's always neat to work on a show, and it brings you closer to actors than before. Citrus was a whole different problem because it's about lesbians. who are stepsisters. and even though it's a show that a lot of people would expect to just be a fan service show, we wanted to treat it very seriously because, you know, it's still approaching very serious feelings that a lot of young women go through. And so it was one of those things that we took very seriously. We read a lot. I read the manga before we even did auditions so I could tell people what the characters were like. We did a lot of background work on Mei to figure out why Mei was the way she was. And that really helped when we directed Amber and things like that. And when you figure those things out, everything else kind of clicks into place about why people act the way they act. Why is Matt Suri such a butt? Like, why is Mei a robot? And once we figured out, like, why are they doing these things, then it all came together and it made it very easy to direct. And everyone in Citrus was as passionate about the project as I was. And so that made it very easy to direct because we were all there wanting to do the same thing, which is like, let's give representation if we can. So it was great. I had a lot of fun directing those shows. Great casts and crews on both of them. So I miss it. But those are my babies. My show babies. I still get gamers merchandise sometimes at cons. So
there you go.
Yeah.
I think they just finished the light novel in Japan recently.
Yeah, they did.
Maybe we'll get a second season.
That'd be cool.
I will hold my breath for it.
Is there anything coming out soon for you that you are legally allowed to tell us about today?
I feel like I usually immediately talk about it if I can. So, you know, there's nothing that I can't talk about that I don't already know. Fire Force was just announced.
Okay, yeah.
My character in Fire Force. To be a boy! Because that's normal. So Fire Force was like my latest thing. There is something coming up, but I can't talk about it yet. But it'll probably be announced within the next couple weeks or so.
Cool.
I'm really excited about the second season of Slime.
Yeah.
If we get
it,
I'm always a little wary after Takagi.
Oh, yeah.
So I try not to get my hopes up until I know for sure we've actually licensed it. But I'm excited about that because I hear it's going to get pretty dark. So, plus I want to be Malik again.
Yeah. Bestie!
Besties for resties.
So, Fire Force and Dr. Stone are both currently airing on Toonami.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just curious if you had any, like, experience with Toonami, like, growing up or something like that?
Absolutely. I watched Toonami growing up. You know, I watched Outlaw Star and Cowboy Bebop and Dragon Ball. Wolf's Rain was one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
That I was really into back in the day. I watched Toonami. It is really weird to me to like be on TV. I tried to tell my parents, I'm like, this is a big deal, and they're like, yeah, sure.
That's nice.
Oh, no. Like, that's nice. We bought you this anime shirt. It says anime, and I'm like, oh. Guys, they are really supportive, but you know, they're not anime fans, and so. They did come out to a con, though, recently. Their first con ever, they came out to Colossal Con and watched me sign people's stuff all day. So it was great. And they got to see My Hero panel.
Cool.
But it is really cool to be on Toonami. And I was not expecting to be on Toonami as much as I was this year. Because up until now, like, my biggest experience was Nakagami and My Hero Academia. And I'm like, and now I'm reoccurring characters in both these shows, like, back-to-back. And I was like, that's really neat. Because I haven't personally had that experience until this year. So it's been a really good year for me. I'm really grateful. Thanks, universe!
Yeah.
As far as where the industry is going forward, is there anything that you're cautious about or hopefully optimistic about?
I mean, I'm optimistic that anime will only become more mainstream. I feel like it continues to grow and reach more people every year, and that people take it more seriously now than they ever have before. You know, being cautious, I think, is just learning and growing and adapting to the way we're doing things now, and, you know, just trying to make sure that we're always staying true to a story when maybe we don't necessarily have all of those puzzle pieces yet. If there is no licensed manga or anything like that, it's just trusting your writer's intuition of, like, this might be important or things like that. I'm writing Kemono Michi Rise Up this season, which is about wrestling pet shop isekais. And there's a character in the beginning named Mal, and he doesn't say anything, but I remember telling Jeremy Inman, I was like, hey, I'm pretty sure Mal will come back. I was like, Mal is what they call demon lords a lot in isekais.
That might be important.
I was like, so I was like, I don't think it's a coincidence that that's his name, and you should plan on him coming back. There is no available translated licensed manga. I could read it illegally, but I don't like to do those things. Mm-hmm. So it was just an instinct, and then sure enough, like in episode like 5 or 6, you know, he comes back, and I was like, I knew it! Like, I knew he was gonna come back. Same thing with Interviews with Monster Girls.
Oh.
A lot of times it's just, like, keeping track of things you think are important. In the manga, Hikari calls people, she gives them nicknames. She says Machi, and, like, Machi has, like, 2 A's in it, I think, in the manga. And I was like, why is this like this? Why does it have an extra letter in it? And Machi says Machi. And it sounds normal in English. And so I went to Jade about it, and I was like, I think this might be a nickname thing. I was like, I noticed she does it with Yuki and Machi and the teacher. I was like, this might be important. And I had nothing to go on other than, like, I as a writer think this might be important. And we sent it to the translator, and the translator came back, and she said, yes, this is a nickname thing they sometimes do in Japan. However, there's no way to translate it, because it sounds the same to us English speakers, and it's a very subtle thing. And so we had to do, like, Machikens, or Yukikens. And I was like, I just feel like it's going to be a big deal, and if we don't have something in place now, we're going to regret it. And sure enough, episode 4 is all about Hikari giving people nicknames, but not her teacher. And if we hadn't done that in episode 1, we would have been in big trouble in episode 4 when that happened. So I think with the way things are now, we just have to be very cautious and very aware of every little thing in a show, and know that, like, maybe every little thing could be a very big thing, and just kind of being attuned to those things. But I'm optimistic that it's just going to keep being great.
Does collaboration with the Japanese side help with that? Can you point to any examples where they say, hey, this is important, just keep that in mind moving forward?
It depends on the show and the translator. A lot of times if that we are getting a lot of translation terms or licensing terms now. With Slime, we got one that was like, these are things you're going to see a lot as the show progresses, and these are their names, and these are moves, and these are people, and these are locations. So those things help, having those official, they're called official terms lists. So having those things available helps a lot with writing, but not every show has that. So it's one of those things where, like, sometimes it requires a lot of research on the writer's part. We are the unsung heroes. But because we have to catch those things all the times before they make it. In that time I got reincarnated as a slime, there was an error in a translation that I caught. And it was actually pointed out, a fan pointed out online. In the Crunchyroll subtitles, when the lizard men are talking about the orc army, in the Crunchyroll translation it says, that's 2 times our size. Which to me says there's 200,000 orcs, that there's either 100,000 lizardmen living in that tiny swamp, or that the number is wrong. And so I looked in the manga, and the manga said, that's 20 times our size. And I was like, that's a totally different number. And then I looked in the light novel, because I read both to write that show. And it said that, it didn't say that exact line, but there was a different part where it said that the king, or the lizardman chieftain, ruled over about 10,000 lizardmen.
Was this the thing you tweeted about, how, like, every source material had a different thing?
Yes, every source material had a different number. And so I wrote 3 alternate lines. They're called alts. And I was like, I explained it to the director. I was like, so it's either this thing that the Crunchyroll says, this thing that the manga says, or this thing that the light novel says. And so once he got that information, he sent it to our translators, because, again, the translation came from Crunchyroll. He sent it to our in-house translators, who double-checked it and listened to it in Japanese, and it was 20, is what they said in Japanese, but it was translated incorrectly on Crunchyroll. But as a writer, it's my job to catch that stuff if I can, and it's not always super obvious. Like, the only reason I thought about that is I was like, there's no way there's 100,000 lizardmen living in this swamp. Like, I was like, that's not even that bad of a number. Those chances are bad. 2 times? That's not that bad. You could do that. And so it was only, again, like, my instinct as a writer and me being like, maybe this is not right. And at that point, I was able to address it. So a lot of times it's just about being like, why does this stick out? What should I do about it? Should I look into it more? Things like that. So there's a lot of writing is the most work out of everything. It is the hardest and the most work.
Going for writing again, which adaptive script did you have the most emotional or personal attachment to?
Magical Girl Writing Project.
That was
my baby. Sometimes we have to contract out scripts if it's like a holiday week. They'll contract one out to a writer like Matt Shipman. And they always come to me and they're like, so, which show do you want to contract out? And, like, anytime they tried to do Magical Girl Raising Project, I was like, please, no. I was like, no, it's mine. I don't want anyone else working on this. Same thing with Slime. I knew so much about Slime at that point because I'd read so many of the light novels and the manga that, like, they didn't want to contract it out to anybody because I knew the most about it. So they're like, we should not contract out that one. Konohoto gets contracted out a lot because... of the way it fell at the time. I don't remember what I was writing now. That was two seasons ago. Anyway, I've slept since then. But it's just one of those things, like, sometimes it falls on deadlines and things like that. But there are certain shows that were like, this one's mine, and we don't want to contract out this one. So.
You just mentioned that you had worked on Interviews with Monster Girls.
Mm-hmm.
What I loved about that show is that the series could work as an analogy for kids who have special needs and disabilities. And I was wondering if that ever came into play when you were adapting the script for that series.
It's definitely something we thought about and talked about. And not just me and Jade, but like Terry Doty and I talked a lot about it. And so it is something that we talked about. I've always thought Machi was the coolest character because I felt like she had to overcome the most out of all the monster girls. Like, everyone else is like, we look pretty normal. But, you know, like, Machi's got a head that she has to carry around. And, like, obviously that comes with a whole bunch of different obstacles. But I liked it because it felt very empowering, especially when Machi goes and studies at the laboratory and she gets to meet that scientist and she's like, I want to become a scientist and study Doulahans and things like that because I can't say no if I do it all myself. And I just thought that was really cool, you know, because it's like you saw this moment where, like, Machi found what she wanted to be and that being a Doulahan, like, never held her back from chasing those kinds of dreams. And so I thought Monster Girls was really cool in that way. Monster Girls also talked constantly, and so there were times I hated writing it because it was nonstop dialogue all the time. And as a writer, you're like, man, I'd kill for a fight scene. So I could save some time writing, but Monster Girls was a very challenging show. It had very challenging flaps, and there was just a lot going on with it. But it's a show I'm very proud of.
All right, let's try something a little different, a little abstract here.
A little more fun. That's what I'm looking at.
Thank you.
There you go.
So you played a number of characters in your day.
Yes. I assume so.
So let's say. You got the chance to hang out with three of them, go out to lunch, all three of you chatting, all four of you actually, you yourself are.
Oh, I'm here, okay, cool.
You are with three of these characters that you are playing, you're going out to lunch, having a good time with them. Who would you want to take to lunch and why?
Oh my gosh, well definitely Maleem, because that would be fun, but probably also a lot of work. Cinco, for sure, she's going to help me rein Maleem in. If anyone can do it, it'd be Cinco. Let's see, a third character.
About Rin, you need somebody to get drunk.
You know what, Rin does more than just get drunk, okay?
Fair enough.
Let's see, Cinco, Maleem, who else? Maybe An. I feel like An would be a lot of fun.
Oh, right.
Yeah. She is technically an adult, so I wouldn't feel weird about it. I wouldn't feel weird hanging out with her. An, I think, would make for some great conversation. So.
An was a very interesting character.
She was fun.
I remember going through that show recently, and that must have been how much did you know going into that one about the stuff with An?
Not a ton. I knew that she was... actually an adult, and something you guys pointed out in your review of it was that her voice changes from when she's pretending to be a kid to when she's actually an adult, which is something we actively went for, so I'm glad you noticed it. you know, we had to play her very differently in the beginning versus in the end, so I knew more about it. I watched ahead when the OVAs came out because I was really interested to see how it was going to wrap up and things like that. And I was really excited for An's big scene because we always talked about, like, that was her kind of speaking for the audience, and that it was really important to get it right. So we did that scene a couple of times until we felt like we had done the audience justice. But yeah, it was fun. She was a troll. And it's always fun playing across from Josh when I get the opportunity. He's a fun person to play across from. Mm-hmm. So, and then we got to do it again on Demon Lord Retry. So,
oh yeah,
completely different characters.
Very different.
Who would you say you relate to the most out of all the characters you've played?
Oh, anime. I would have to say probably either Rin or Senko. I mean, obviously I'm not a magical fox, but I do a lot of cooking. I take care of people.
Unless you are.
Unless I
am.
We watched Senko. This is a fun story I like to tell about my 10-year-old. We watched Senko. Like me, she loves Animal Girls. And we were watching it, and she goes, I wish Senko were real. And I was like, excuse me. I was like, first off, for you, Senko is real. I was like, I'm the voice of Senko. I cook for you. I take care of you when you're sick. I do your laundry. I clean the house. Like, I hug you. Like, I do all this stuff for you. I was like, I am Senko.
Where's your fluffy tail, though?
That's exactly what she said. She goes, yeah, but you don't have a tail. I was like, this is my fault. So I do relate to Senko very much. I guess Bailey's not, you know, and she's sad I don't have a tail to fluff. And then like Rin, because like I said, Rin is very. There are a lot of parts of Rin that are like me. I like to think I can hold my liquor better, but maybe I can't. Maybe it's all a lie. We'll never know. I won't tell.
I keep some trade secrets.
That's right.
I was about to say, like, hey, we're in the middle of Manhattan. Like, we can put this to the test right now.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. No one ever gets drunk in New York.
All right, well, jumping on what your daughter had just said, let's just say that, you know, you had your own fox deity waiting at home for you after each long day at work. What would you ask of them to help ease the burdens of the day?
I would ask them to put away my laundry.
Ooh. That's a big mood.
If I could get it out of the basket that it's been sitting in for the 2 weeks, clean, mind you, that would be great. And then probably dinner. I love making dinner, but sometimes I work like 12-hour days. So like going home and cooking is like, I was like, I order a lot of DoorDash.
That was me with my old job. I recently got a new job, moved down here. Like, I work 10, 12-hour days, and someone's like, I just don't want to do a thing.
Yeah, I order a lot of DoorDash to work, and then I order a lot of DoorDash sometimes to home. Sometimes I grocery shop and then order DoorDash. Sometimes I order my groceries online, so I don't have to waste time grocery shopping.
Yeah.
I do a lot of stuff like that, because I'm like, time is money!
You gotta do what you gotta do.
When you do three different jobs, you do whatever you can to save time. So I'm like, you know what? I can order groceries at work and schedule them to be delivered when I get home, and then I don't have to stop and shop for an hour. So
another interesting question. So I know we were talking about Magical Girl Raising Project and how it almost wasn't a thing and then it came back. We can't use that as an answer anymore. What's one anime project you really wanted to work on but didn't have the chance to?
I guess a Snow White with the red hair. Fairy tales are my jam. I love fairy tales. I love like retold fairy tales. It's like my favorite thing to read that like is not anime. And I love Snow White with the red hair, and I thought that it was a great show. I did audition for it. I did not get cast at the time, but I got called in for Walla, but I got called in for it while I was scheduled to be at a convention. And so I never got called back in for it, and so I was like, I didn't even get to be Walla. And so that was always one that I kind of lamented, that I was like, I was not available. And when people call people in for Walla, it's kind of like, they give you like a general list of people they want to hear. And you're just there to fill in like bit parts or background noises or crowd noises. So it's like, if I give them like 6 people and the first person can't make it, they just move down the list to the next person. So it's not like they're like, oh, we'll wait for you, Kristen. It doesn't happen that way with Walla, unless the director specifically says, like, I need this person because they have one line as their named character. So then they'll make sure that person gets in there. But if it's just general Walla, you get whatever you get. Sometimes and give a list of six people, and they'll come back, and they're like, we need more names. And I'm like, where is everybody? Like, don't you want to be an anime? So then you're like, have to come up with more names. And I'm like, who haven't I cast yet? This person. So that's how that works. But so that was a show I really liked. I also love Show by Rock. Again, Animal Girls. Yeah. It's my jam. So anytime there's an Animal Girl show, I want to be in it as an Animal Girl.
Kind of piggybacking off of that one, have you ever seen, like, something that they sub that you watched all the way through, or something on, like, Crunchyroll, Hulu, anything like that, where you're like, this would have been a really cool thing to work on, but you just didn't get the chance to?
I mean, yeah, it's not so much subbed. I love Sword Art Online, but, you know, that's an LA show, and so the odds of being in that are very slim. So that was a show I really liked. I watched My Little Monster subbed, and I really liked that one. And I don't know if that was ever dubbed.
It was not.
Yeah. But that was one that I thought was really cool. I really liked that one. I like the slice of life shows. I like shows about cute girls a lot because I want to draw.
If you have yet to watch it, I highly recommend checking out Laid Back.
Yes!
Oh, yeah, that one looks cute!
I actually watched that show with my niece. She's like 2 years old, but she loves it.
Sometimes I'm afraid I'll watch it and then get sad if it gets dubbed by a company that I can't work for. Or it's not that I can't work for them, it's just like the odds are very slim. Sometimes I get scared to watch things and like get attached.
I don't want to care too much.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't want to. I was so convinced that if Magical Girl Racing Project went to a different studio that I wasn't going to be able to watch it. I was like, I can't. I don't care if it's the best dub ever. I can't watch it. It should have been mine. But I'm glad. I really like the Magical Girl Reason Project we have now, even though it's a different cast and everything. I really like how everyone sounds, and it's really interesting. It's neat to see a few of the cast members were the same. Again, I won't tell you who, but there were three cast members that we cast that ended up in the exact same roles when they auditioned for it. And so it was really interesting. I'm like, oh, great minds. But I'll never tell.
Yes. Trade secret.
NDAs.
That too.
Am I purposely trying to toy with you, or am I legally obligated not to tell you? You'll never know.
You decide.
So I think we are coming to the end of our allotted time here, but I didn't have any more questions. I just want to thank you for spending an hour with us today.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun.
The sentiment is shared. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, I like that you guys have so many writing questions. I feel like nobody cares about us. Yeah. Everyone's like, well, what voice can you do?
That's a real shame.
That's why I'm glad a lot of us are of similar mindsets and are very interested in the process.
It's always nice to talk about it. Yeah. I just want people to know how hard it is. It's so hard.
To write, to direct, it's not just about sounding good. It's about the thinking process.
There's a million things that go into it, and sometimes I lurk on the dub Reddit, and
just a lot.
I say lurk, and there's so many people that's like, this thing, and I'm like, wrong, but I can't tell you that. Like, I can't
just
say
make a burner account and be like, wrong.
Like, wrong, you're wrong. And they're like, how do you know? And I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Yell at them so you don't have to.
Anonymous sources.
Yeah, it's...
I can't believe this Malene Besties for Resties person is trying to tell me all
that. What do they know about slime? I want to talk about that really quick before we go.
Oh, yeah.
So, slime is an interesting world because, of course, the only person from that world that we know of are, like, the kids and Rimuru and things like that. And in the Crunchyroll subs, they say besties. And they start off with besties. Just like, we're besties! And I was like, but Malene wouldn't know what besties means. That's not a term that exists in this world, to my knowledge. There's also a baseball joke that we wrote out. And someone asked me once, they said, why did you write out this baseball joke? She goes, seifu, seifu, in Japanese. And she's like, so it's good, it's all good. I said, why did you write that out? And I said, because to my knowledge, baseball does not exist in this world. And that is why I wrote it out. But the besties thing was like, Rimuru would say besties, but he's not the one who brings up this term. And so I had her say, like, she's like, you know, we're best friends. And then when he talks to everyone, he's like, we're besties for resties. And that's how we snuck besties in there, without having Malene say it first. So it's not a huge victory, but I felt really good about my fix for that. So,
well done.
Yeah, I was like, we did it. We got slang in there without making it about someone who wouldn't know what the slang is.
Right.
There's a lot of things we think about with isekai shows, depending on the director.
Yeah.
So. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah. It's been great.